are so pleased to have in studio today the Director of Economic Development for the City of Stamford, Thomas Madden, and the Executive Director for the Stamford Partnership, Jackie Lightfield. And we say welcome to both of you to Front and Center.
Thank you so much
for having us. Yeah.
Thomas, we'll start with you. Give us an overview on what's going on from an economic standpoint in Stamford.
Well, I think it's pretty easy. You know, with the tagline of over $6 billion worth of development that is happening within Stamford, that sort of speaks volumes for where we're really going and what's happening down in the city. You know, we have our South End, which is about a $3.5 billion development ongoing right now. That's looking at about 4,300 apartments that we're building. They've completed just over half of that right now. And what's amazing with that is they're filling up really quickly. You know, I think the last check was like 96% occupancy on all that stuff coming in. You know, you go to our downtown area, we've got about four building cranes up right now. And then we've got our hospital, that's another $500 million development that's ongoing to upgrade the hospital. And then we look at a lot of the new companies that are moving in. It's really truly remarkable what's happening down there.
Jackie, talk a bit about the Stamford Partnership.
So the Stamford Partnership is a rather unique organization that the City of Stamford created about 38 years ago. It is a combination of one-third of the business community, one-third of the nonprofit community, and one-third of the government community that comprises our board. And we tackle issues on behalf of the city that relate to the quality of life, to economic development, and to cultural activities. So over our long history, we have been involved in everything from helping encourage UConn to move from our suburban location in North Stamford to the downtown, to helping start a lot of the neighborhood groups that currently work on the grassroots level of issues in various neighborhoods of Stamford, of which we have a diverse range of neighborhoods, which is fantastic.
Thomas, I read where you thought it was important, and I think, Jackie, you as well, as far as integrating UConn more into the picture. Talk about that.
You really can't have a growing city without having a great university at its heart. And Stamford is very fortunate to have the Stamford UConn campus. And we believe that not only UConn, but also Sacred Heart and University of Bridgeport and Fairfield University have also put campuses in. And NCC is also running programs in Stamford. And having that open intellectual capital that is part of that youthful energy of innovation, which Stamford has always been known for, is an integral part of growing the city. And one of the best things that has just recently happened is that UConn is now going to open residential dorms in the downtown right next to the UConn campus. So we will now have students who are not just commuting in from the region, but also living in Stamford, and that's a really big boost to the area.
I'd say also, too, as part of the programming from both of those, or the schools that are there, it's really starting to influence the type of businesses that we have within Stamford itself, because we're getting a direct line of interns coming out of those schools directly into our businesses. And that's really helping to solidify a sustainable workforce pipeline for a lot of the companies that are located within Stamford.
Well, and we see, for example, businesses moving back into downtown areas for that very same reason, Thomas.
I would say the one of the latest companies we just did, ribbon cutting, and Governor Malloy was down there, is Black Stratus. It's a financial tech company. They were located in New Jersey, and they picked Stamford to be the new headquarters. They have about 35 people there right now. They expect to be up to about 75 people by Christmas time, and he's expecting to be over 200 by next year. And they are doing cybersecurity, and they actually have a huge contract with the British government as part of what they're doing here. So, you know, we have that type of companies that are moving in. We have numerous other smaller financial companies throughout that are growing very, very quickly. A lot of management software companies and tax software companies that help support a lot of the large businesses.
We hear and read that Stamford is a mini New York. Is Stamford too closely connected with New York, or can it stand on its own?
I'll tackle that one. It is our biggest asset, being close to New York City. The New York City metro area, and that includes northern New Jersey and Fairfield County, is the economic epicenter of the world. So why would we want to say that we need to stand alone and apart from that? No, we're part of that. But what we offer is a different quality of life. You can't go paddleboarding in the Gowanus River, but you can go paddleboarding in Long Island Sound, and we have lots of waterfront that's available and accessible to the public, and that's our differentiation to the rest of the Fairfield County.
Yeah, I also say that we're also, when you start to look at the rents, we're cheaper. And our cultural events, arts and culture, are really picking up in Stamford. Now, do we have the Met and certain things down there? No, we don't have that. But, you know, we do have the Stamford Symphony, and that is basically New York artists that come up to Stamford to play there. You know, we sort of, it's a friendly relationship with New York City. We talk to the mayor's office down in New York all the time, and some of the stuff that de Blasio was doing, we always joked that Mayor Martin was doing first, and we said, you know, we're really appreciative of de Blasio copying what Stamford is and doing for Mayor Martin, and he's taking it down to New York City.
I think I read where one of your goals is to prepare Stamford for the 22nd century. Talk about that.
I think that's probably one of the biggest things that most cities need to start addressing is where the technology is taking them. Technology is moving very, very quickly. And the last place that, you know, it really trickles down to is cities, believe it or not. One of the things that we've been working all summer, I've got a group of interns that have been working on an autonomous car plan, driverless cars, getting a city ready for driverless cars. And when you start to read the industry magazines and talk to industry people, you know, with Volvo trying to push out an autonomous vehicle by 2022, fully autonomous, you've got Tesla, which has a semi-autonomous programming already. You know, a lot of that stuff is coming very, very quickly. And so our job with Jack and myself and a really good team of people that we have is getting the city ready for that technology. So we want to be at the forefront of that. And that includes, you know, as part of the CT Gig project, bringing in affordable broadband to really start to tackle the issue for Internet of Things, because as everything is getting connected to the Internet, and we want to make sure that the city is ready for accepting that technology.
Jackie, I know you're big on technology. You have a background in that. Mm-hmm. Expand upon this.
Well, so the number one thing is you know, if everybody's life is it has transitioned to being able to go to a grocery store and using your phone to pay for things, why can't you interact with municipal government the same way? So from the ground up, municipal government has to change and adapt to the way that people are actually conducting the rest of their lives. So that's just on the communication end. But on the policy side, you know, what are the implications of having driverless cars or autonomous vehicles? And, you know, is it going to be that people are going to be driving these, or are we going to have delivery trucks that are going to be able to seek out where they need to deliver things? And how are we going to move people, goods, and services in an automated way? You know, we haven't even begun that conversation, even though the governor has got this great 30-year plan talking about improving our transportation infrastructure. Notably absent in the whole thing is, well, what about autonomous vehicles? You know, why aren't we talking about high-speed light rail that can be completely autonomous driven that we've seen implemented in other cities? By not having that conversation started means it's going to take longer to get there. And I think both Thomas and I believe that if we start the conversation about this stuff, we will lead the way into how we're going to adapt to these new technologies that are emerging faster than anybody truly expected.
From this technological infrastructure improvement, what are we looking at in the way of dollars and cents, not only to bring Stamford up to par, but to be ahead of the game?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to be a public-private partnership. You know, as most municipalities within Connecticut, they're strapped for cash. It's just the way the taxing system is set up, because we're, you know, heavily reliant on property tax. I believe Stamford alone is about 92% of its budget is coming from property tax. So we have to look at building those partnerships with the companies out there to have them invest in the cities as well, and to be, so you know, be a part of those partnerships, and then getting the schools on top of that to be that sort of next layer to all sort of work together in order to make something like this happen.
And just to write in a little bit on that, you know, when we talk about the tax implications of some of this technology, such as driverless cars, when you have vacant parking structures or vacant parking asphalt lots, which are taxed at the lowest rate that you could possibly get for a municipality, unlocking that for future development, because you don't need to have so much parking infrastructure, because cars will now be more in use or be able to park off-site somewhere else. They don't need to be on-site. Is a great boon to development and increasing the tax base for all the municipalities in the area. And we want Stamford to be the leader and show the example of how you can start talking about that and how you can start planning for that.
And a lot of that, when we talk about that, is, you know, we look at really the rest of Connecticut is helping us out with that. You know, you look at the military-industrial complex within Connecticut with Pratt Whitney, Sikorsky, Lockheed Martin, Electric Boat. You know, the military technology that is out there is really transcribing over into autonomous cars and a lot of the day-to-day technology that we're looking at. We have a lot of that stuff right here. And so it's really harnessing a lot of those companies to say, you know, let's either create a new division or grab some of that technology, bring it into our schools, and how do we get some of our startups to come and sort of build upon that field.
Let's take a look, and we are talking with our guests, Thomas Madden, Director of Economic Development for the City of Stamford, and Jackie Lightfield, Executive Director for the Stamford Partnership, here on Front and Center. Let's look ahead to 2030, which in our mind, on the one hand as well, that's still down the road, but on the other hand, is not that far away. What is Stamford doing? We talk about the 22nd century. What do you envision Stamford looking like 14 years down the road?
I'll give that one to Jackie first, and I'll follow up.
So 14 years in the past, we didn't have smartphones. Our ability to talk on cell phones was kind of limited to, what was it, like the StarTex, which were the sexy things back then. So 14 years out, I don't think anyone can predict what kind of technology we're going to have in place. I don't think it's been invented yet, but it's going to be there. Right now we're talking about mobile delivery of a lot of goods and services. I think that's going to continue. But how it's going to continue, I think it's just going to be more fabulous and more terrific. And we need to prepare for that. As the federal government is moving most of their communication and delivery of goods and services to the digital realm, clearly the digital divide is something that we are very concerned about, and we want to make sure that everybody has access to the internet, as it's going to be that public realm that we think of in more traditional ways as being, people-centric, that we need to actually work much harder than we have in the past of making things more accessible to all digitally, because you just have the power of being able to do instant translation or instant communication or instant delivery of goods and services where you, in a traditional way, you didn't have that before. So I think that's the kind of things that we're looking at. We're preparing the city for 14 years out.
As part of some of the projects I have my interns working on, we've talked with Uber quite a few times, and we always sort of joke with Uber, 10, 15 years from now, you're going to take a driverless car into work, it's going to drop you off, and then we always joke with Uber, Uber's going to take over your car and lease it from you and go around and pick other people up. And so that's going to, that's a complete industry change. In terms of some of the stuff that we're looking at, and that's what we're really trying to prepare for. So talking with, 18-year-old, 17-year-old interns, they're like, oh, that would be great. And so, we sort of push them down the line and saying, when you look at the biggest change that's happening, when the automobile was invented, it was horse and buggy. Now, what happened to all the horse buggy whip makers and carriage makers and all that stuff? That slowly got phased out, and they got transitioned into that other technology. And that's one of the things that we're also trying to address is, as that technology is coming down the line, is how do we transition our own workforce, whether it be people coming out of school or an older workforce, into those type of jobs.
If we don't make this investment, where does that leave this region compared to other areas of the country, and for that matter, compared to other areas of the world?
Way behind. Honestly, really far, far behind. We just had the ambassador from New York City up for the Indian consulate, and they were talking about some of the stuff that they're trying to do in India, and they're sending their brightest and best students here. They had me talk to a bunch of them from MIT, talking about what we were trying to do here, and they're trying to pull this back into their own countries to solve some of the problems that they see, that's growing there. What we'd like to do is try to keep as much of that technology and some of that brain power here, to help solve some of our problems, to keep us, again, as those world leaders on some of these technology issues.
Jackie?
Well, we already have seen when we didn't adapt to the new technologies in cell technology, where other countries were able to leapfrog us in terms of being, able to deliver phone service to parts of their countries that didn't make the investment hundreds of years ago or tens of decades ago into copper wires. It's a very similar position that we're in now. If we're not going to adapt and adopt new technologies, we will be leapfrogged by other places. And these days, since much of the high growth industries are in tech companies, whether it's bioscience or internet related companies or so on, workers can choose to live wherever they want to be. The internet is kind of disrupting the idea that you need to have your headquarters in a particular location because that's where you need your ability to access markets needs to be. Well, the internet is kind of disrupting that on all sorts of different levels. So if you can be anywhere in the world working for any company that's located somewhere else, you need to have that infrastructure in place. And if we don't have that high-speed internet, we are going to be left behind. So that's really the threat that we're looking at.
Thomas, Stanford's population is what, 126,000, 124,000?
No, we're almost 128,960, according to July's American Community Survey. However, we've talked to the guys. We think they've calculated wrong because we had a bunch of buildings open up that they didn't count. So we are knocking on the door of New Haven, and I suspect by next year when they recalculate everything, we will be larger than New Haven.
So what's making Stanford attractive?
One is open up the waterfront. When you look at the south end, the waterfront in that area was really, you had Pitney Bowes down there. They had a lot of manufacturing. You had the power plant and all the oil terminals down there. It just was a big brownfield, and it wasn't a very nice area. Now, with the opening up of the waterfront, this is the first time we've actually had public access that anybody can go down to and start walking along the boardwalks and actually enjoy the harbor. I got to give credit to the Downtown Special Services District. Sandy Goldstein, about 20 years ago, really started to change the downtown, which helped spur a lot of this development. So by cleaning up our downtown, bringing more people downtown, getting the apartments down there, that really helped act as a catalyst for the rest of development within Stanford, because the corporations were coming in and saying, oh, this is a great, safe place to be, and it's not a place that rolls up its shutters at 5 o'clock. We've got a lot of different events that are happening, Monday through Sunday.
Is there a new transit center under construction, too? What?
Well, that's the TOD. That's still, I believe, locked up in contract negotiations with CONDOT. And so what they're doing right now, we haven't heard anything back from them. But there was a proposal for redoing part of the parking structure and adding another building at the train station. But I don't believe it was it wasn't, from what plans I've seen, didn't touch the train station at all. And that's one of the things that we do have to address. And I know the mayor is very adamant about this, is we have to start building our infrastructure, especially our train infrastructure, for the 22nd century. So we're making sure we have enough room in there for additional lines of train coming in, but also looking at different train technology as it comes out over the next, really 100 years.
But let's talk about our transportation center, because outside of Grand Central Station, it is the busiest train station in the Northeast, and I think also the country. We have people that are commuting from within Connecticut to Stanford and from outside Connecticut into Stanford. And that's a very unique dynamic that is not replicated pretty much anywhere else in the state. Because of that, because of the enormous amount of people that are coming into to work, it has changed the dynamic of what our needs are at the transportation center. It is definitely something that, from a future viewpoint, that we want to make sure that it's accommodating to all forms of transportation, not just the current Metro North and the current idea that people drive into the into the transportation center, hop on a train and go into Manhattan, because the numbers are telling us it's a different story. It's not just that people are driving to the train station and then going into Manhattan. We have people from Manhattan coming into Stanford.
We're a net inbound station now. We have more people coming in into Stanford than leaving Stanford.
Wow.
So that changes what we want to see from the amenity standpoint and what we want to see from the area around it. And it's a great opportunity to really combine and unify The look of Stamford from the waterfront to the northern parts of Stamford, because right now we've got I-95 and the train line running that kind of divides the city, and that's true of most of the coastal communities in Fairfield County. But we have an opportunity to do something completely radically different there, and we're hoping that with enough visionary leadership that we will see something transformative happen there.
You know, we were talking before the show, Thomas, that Stamford has, from a digital broadcast standpoint, NBC Sports is located there. The YES Network is located there. Obviously, with NBC Sports, we've got the Olympics coming up. Talk a bit about that.
We have a huge digital media presence within Stamford. Like you said before, we have NBC Sports there. WWE has its broadcasting headquarters there. YES Network, the Yankee Network, is out of there. We have Encompass Digital Media. We have the Connecticut Film Center. We just are going to have This Old House, which is going to locate in Stamford, coming out of Boston. So that was our little pullback from Boston, I guess. And then we have WorkPoint, which is a co-working media space. So when Tom Rutledge was doing all of the talk shows lately from Charter Communications talking about the merger, he was being filmed out of Stamford, and that's one of the things that we offer. We have digital media programs, which are now matching up at UConn to help, again, as we talk about that sustainable workforce, that pipeline coming in. And that's really helping to attract a lot of companies, you know, as they sort of create this ecosystem within the city itself.
Jackie.
All the things that Thomas has mentioned is exactly part of that digital internet energy that is happening in Stamford. As we made a decision to invite those types of companies, as the state has supported the film credit tax, the film tax credits that enable production of films and TV shows to come into Connecticut, that made us competitive with Arizona and California and so on, and it kind of changed the game for our area. Our proximity to New York does not hurt us. We are an alternative space that has a little bit more breathing room than some of the areas of Manhattan, and it's just been a fantastic growth area for us.
And I say we're pretty proud with NBC Sports. They've they've been bringing in their rest of their companies, you know, from Florida and consolidating into Stamford itself. And you know, as you mentioned, the Olympics. You know, the mayor likes to say that every electron that is now being filmed at the Olympics goes through Stamford first before it goes out to the rest of the world. Oh, Sochi was that way. Rio's going to be this way.
And not just English language broadcasts. We're also the largest Spanish network broadcast. I think we attracted...
There's 100 jobs out of Florida when they consolidated.
Wow. Can you stay through the break?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, great. Coming up on a break, we'll be back with our guests, Thomas Madden and Jackie Lightfield from Stamford. We have news coming up at the bottom of the hour, but a few more questions for our guest here on Front and Center as we talk about Stamford, Connecticut. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lovato, and we are joined in studio by Thomas Madden. He is Director of Economic Development for the City of Stamford, and Jackie Lightfield, Executive Director for the Stamford Partnership. Jackie, we were talking before about your background in technology, but also the arts. How important are the arts to a municipality?
They're very important. The creative economy is one of the largest growth sectors for the state of Connecticut overall. And much of the rebirth of the downtowns that we've seen nationwide, going back to Richard Florida's the creative economy or the creative class, and probably mangling the title of his book, but the idea that the creative economy is a local based economy, so the dollars that are earned and are spent locally. You cannot outsource somebody who's going to do set design work for a stage production, or an artist that's going to install a mural on a vacant property building and so on. So Stamford has been very fortunate in that we have a very strong creative class economy, whether it's digital designers or, as we talked earlier about, film production people and so on, that has been part of the story of revitalizing and growing the city of Stamford to what it is today. And the fact that we have such a strong community with our downtown special services district putting on concerts and performances and supporting our theatrical venues such as the Avon Theater and the Palace. With a support from the business community to support the arts has just been a fantastic story overall.
Thomas, sell Stamford as an economic development head. Sell Stamford to the rest of Connecticut and those listening, who knows, around the world today on the Internet to this interview.
Well, one of the things that we really, you know, Mayor Martin, when he came into office, he really wanted to focus on was some of our small business development. And making sure that small businesses have an opportunity to start up, grow, and flourish. So what Stamford did is they said, well, you know, we're going to sign on to the Startup in a Day pledge by President Obama and his administration and said, we will help our small businesses try to move forward. So one of the things that we've created is a small business portal. It's stanfordbusinessportal.org, and it allows businesses to walk through all the red tape that you typically find in City Hall. And we have checklists that basically, if you want to start a food truck, here's your checklist of all the things that you're going to have to stop and see and the permits you're going to get and be able to submit as you work your way through City Hall. And so that way you're not running now from department to department to department to figure out what you actually need and everybody sort of pointing their fingers all over the place. We said, let's simplify this as much as possible. The second thing we started working on for this summer was a new economic development website that really highlights what are the greatest and best attributes of Stamford itself. So it's aimed at our commercial real estate brokers, our residential real estate brokers, but also our HR managers for a lot of the businesses. And it goes through what really makes Stamford great on the whole work-live play. So we have one section just on work alone. It talks about our top 100 companies within Stamford itself, giving all the information on those companies and links to the HR sites. We talk about just the live. We've actually broke down all of the 13 different neighborhood associations that we have. We've got a nice little four-page brochure done in each neighborhood with maps and sort of, you know, highlights of each of the different areas, medium housing income, things like that, so that if you're looking for a placement in Stamford, you've got this wealth of information that you can already go to right there. And then sort of the place side of Stamford is we started putting together a calendar of all of our different events. And so we're going to be the source right now of and bringing all the other different groups together. So the Stamford Museum and Nature Center, when they have an event, it gets listed through this website. The South End, DSSD, the downtown area, and then sort of grabbing some of the regional stuff that's around us as well and putting that all together. What we want to do is be able to have HR managers use this site to be able to say when you're interviewing someone in from New York City, say, here's all the events that are happening today. Oh, you're on Wednesday. We paid for you to stay overnight. Oh, by the way, there's right now there's yoga jam happening, you know, at 7 o'clock down on Mill River Park. You really go check it out because when you go down to that event, there's like 300 people down there. Or, you know, you're in over the weekend, we've got Sunday morning events that are happening down on the boardwalk. We've got, oh, by the way, Fleet Feet has a Monday night run that you may want to go partake in. You know, we've got our cycling clubs that are doing rides at a Pacific Cycle or Danny Cycle around an area and say, here's the nights that they have cycling going. So that way, we start to really create a complete community. And we're able to highlight sort of the best stuff that really Stamford has to offer and why you want to live there and sort of set up your business there.
Stamford is really a diverse city, isn't it?
Very diverse. And we call ourselves the UN of Connecticut because of that diversity. We're very proud of the fact of how diverse we are. We have a very strong Latino population. We have a very strong Asian population, which includes also Indian. And then we have our African-American population, all very, very strong roots within the community. And then when you look at the rest of Stamford with the Italian Center and a lot of the Irish and everything else, it's, again, a very deep-rooted community, as I'm finding out as I'm walking into it. But I got to say, it blends so well, you know, all the different events that we have. Everybody is at each event.
And because of that, we have a world representation of the types of food in the quality of our restaurants. I mean, you can have everything from Moroccan food, Ethiopian, to, you know, the best pizza that Stamford is known for, which is Colony Pizza. You know, the best coffee in the state is a little place called Lorca. Mm-hmm. These are all small businesses that started in Stamford and are thriving in Stamford because there is people that support that local yet international flair of cuisine. And we have a vibrant dining area in our downtown and also on our waterfront. We have a rooftop bar on our waterfront that overlooks the Long Island Sound. you know, it's fantastic.
We just had another new restaurant open up, Booth Bay Lobster Company, and these guys are driving in lobsters every day from Maine for this restaurant.
Wow. Every day
every
from
day.
Maine.
You know, we just had Prime open up just on the boardwalk on the other side of the harbor, you know, the crab shell down there. Absolutely incredible nightlife. It was interesting because one of the things that we were talking with the Business Council of Fairfield, they started doing was these intern nights at a lot of the different places, because as your intern with the different companies, it was very insular, and they, you know, were having a very low rate of people actually accepting jobs. I think it was in the 30%. Now that we've got a lot of people coming out at night, I think it's up to in the 70s for acceptance of jobs after they finish interning in Stanford, because all of a sudden we have this great nightlife and we have all these different activities during the day and the weekend that people can do. You know, I think we host a 5K run almost every week within Stanford itself. And then you have like all the nonprofits and the charities. Again, just sort of add to the fabric of the community that really, again, as I go back, I talk about the complete, you know, community. That's what we're trying to create here.
I think you touched upon it before, but as an overview, how much did opening up that waterfront jumpstart a lot of this?
I would say it was coming from the downtown special services district, like I said, that was the catalyst that started a lot of stuff, because that cleaned up a lot of our downtown. If you went down in the early part of the 90s, it was not a nice place, and you know, it rolled up its shutters. As the apartments started to build and you got more people in advance, that helped out everything, and people said, okay, it's safe. And so that helped spur a lot of that initial investment. And then when the South End opened up, it's really just exploded. You know, you look at the apartments and events, you know, you go to the Commons Park down in front of the apartments building there, and Wednesday nights they're doing movies outside. They got the big screen outside. 5 o'clock, it turns into a giant dog park. You probably have 50 or 60 people that, you know, are down there with their dogs running around, and, you know, and then in terms of pedestrian access, it's just, you know, the way they have everything set up with the pathways up the fairway and everything else, it's truly remarkable.
And I just want to add a little bit to that, because I think Stanford was at the forefront of identifying that as it was turning around its downtown, which opened up things to the idea of not just having a downtown that was commercial-based or office-based or retail-based. They wanted to make an environment that where people could live downtown. So they made an investment in building apartments in the downtown, but not just luxury apartments. They made a commitment to being one of the first cities in the state to adopt an affordable housing regulation that increased the housing stock on an affordability basis that now has spread throughout the entire city and in the rest of Connecticut. And I think that the leadership of Stanford deserves a lot of credit for putting those pieces in place, because the result has been this dynamic growth that we haven't seen in other cities in Connecticut, and being cognizant of being able to be affordable to all ranges of income was very important to keeping that cohesion in the downtown and spreading that out through the rest of Stanford. And I think Stanford has been a really great leader in that regard.
I'd say Jonathan Rose Companies has built an affordable apartment three block units right next to the train station. I don't believe there's any other places within Connecticut that has put affordable housing right at the train station to allow people who are making below market rates or below the medium income the opportunity to be able to access transportation like that. Usually that's reserved for all the high end. And so we're really taking that approach to make sure that we're inclusive of everybody.
We keep hearing this, by the way, for a city to revive itself, one of the key components is to have people living downtown, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Before we wrap up the interview, we're talking a lot about technology, and I know, Jackie, that the city has been working on, you've been working on an application for people to download onto their phones about Stanford. What can you tell us about that?
Well, application, you know, that's really old school. You know, it's an app. It's a mobile app. It's called Discover Stanford, and we've been working on it for about a year and a half. It is a location-based, real-time information about things that are going on around you. We are in the process of installing an iBeacon network throughout the city. And what iBeacons are, they're low-powered Bluetooth transmitters that if you have the app, they will alert you to things that are going on in that proximate location. So our pilot location is the Ferguson Library, which is a fantastic library located right in the heart of our downtown. And they will be putting information that is ephemeral in nature and relevant to when you first walk into the library, what do you need to know? And we're hoping to have that in beta within the next couple of weeks. I think we're waiting on some final coding before we get approval from the Apple Store and from Google Play. So we're very excited about this. A lot of different iBeacon applications have been put out there. I think Hartford has one that's connected to the bus transitway. And I think you're going to see more of this type of technology in play. What's great about it is it doesn't require a lot of infrastructure. It just requires a lot of great content, and we like developing content.
Great stuff. Jackie, Thomas, anything else you'd like to add?
Thanks for having us up. I really appreciate it. I think in terms of just getting the story of Stanford and what's happening out there, I think it's really important. We, as part of being part of Connecticut, we're all in this together, and we want to make sure we're working with other municipalities that are nearby us and, throughout Connecticut to really move Connecticut forward. I think Connecticut has a huge amount of potential, and I think we're starting to build the ecosystems that the companies and a lot of the businesses and people are looking for.
Jackie?
Well, we just want to invite everybody to come down to Stanford and check us out. You can come by train, you can come by car, and you can come by bike. We are open to everybody having a good time and enjoying the wonderful waterfront that we have and the exciting things that go on in our downtown.
Oh, that's great. Thomas Madden, Director of Economic Development for Stanford, Jackie Lightfield, Executive Director for the Stanford Partnership, have been our guests on Front and Center. Thomas, Jackie, thank you very much for coming into our studio today for this interview.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.